T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
I'm T.C. Hale. That's my name.
Oh, I'm glad he knows his name today.
Yeah, it's a new day. Yes. New day now. Uh-huh. I know my name.
It's a new day. And to my left, we have Hottie Patati Will Schmidt.
Hi.
Fitness trainer to the stars. Hello, Will Schmidt.
How's it going?
It's going good.
It's going good today because we're fancy because we have a fancy guest.
So exciting.
Our second fancy guest.
Yeah, it's
okay,
pretty exciting.
Okay, I'm going to try to say her name.
Oh, this is going to go well.
She's Danish, right? Did she say Danish? It's Benedicta Lerka.
Or Benedict. There's like extra syllables that you have to throw
in there.
It's hard.
We can just say Benedict, but we like to try to say her name properly. Benedicta Lerka.
So, well, let's see if we can get her on here. Benedicta, are you with us?
Yes.
Yay. We're so excited to have you with us today. We really appreciate you taking time to talk with us, sharing some of your knowledge. And Will wanted to have you on the show just because you're so attractive and so smart and you have a cool accent. But we thought that while you're here, we might as well talk about some thyroid stuff.
And folks, she is as impressive as her name is difficult to pronounce. And
good.
We want to get into what makes her so impressive and also give her a chance to actually pronounce her own name.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Benedicta, could you, one, correct our horrible pronunciation thereof and also tell us a little bit about your background, what you do professionally, and you know, a little bit about your own passion for health?
Yeah, sure. My name, pronounced in Danish, is Benedicta Lerke.
That was close.
Yeah, it's close, very close. And I am Danish, so right now I'm sitting in Denmark,
which is
Europe, Scandinavia.
My husband is Dutch, so he's from the Netherlands, so people always confuse him.
Yeah, it's not Holland, it's Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. So, and I have a master's degree in biochemistry and a PhD in something called biochemical and chemical engineering.
So you actually know stuff.
You're smart.
I hope so.
Way smarter than us, which is why we like to
talk.
That's
great.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing is I have a company called Biochem Nordic, and it's actually an online business. So everything I do is on biochemnordic.com, if anyone wants to look it up. And what I'm doing is that I take the research of a very clever American PhD called Ray Peet, and I take all of his writings and his books, his newsletters, his interviews, and I try to condense his ideas with it from nutrition, thyroid issues, hormonal imbalances, aging problems, all kinds of health issues. I try to take all his ideas and put them into a program so people can actually use his research in their everyday life.
Yeah, because to describe Ray Peet as clever is putting that lightly. by far, he's absolutely a brilliant guy. So it's nice that you take all of his knowledge and make it to where a human can understand it.
Yeah, it's kind of like saying Gandhi was nice.
Yeah.
But that's actually how I found you, is through my own love and passion for Ray Peet's writings. Ray Peet links directly to Benedicta's website, biochemnordic.com, which is a fantastic program. It's a really cleanly laid out, clear to understand summation of the practical application of Ray Peet's writings. And you can find Ray Peet's articles at raypeet.com. And depending on your level of, like, I guess background
or words that you know. Depending on how many words you know.
Yes, you may or may not be able to understand Ray Peet.
I understood two words.
Yeah. I think that he writes as clearly and in as like jargon free as he possibly can, considering what he's talking about. But even still, if you don't have like any sort of background at all in health or health sciences, it could be tough to like make sense of. So we appreciate you helping to make it more accessible to people.
Yeah, and even for me, sometimes it's a lot of words. It's a lot of he uses a lot of biochemistry and he throws a lot in there. So and it's even for me sometimes I have to look things up in order to follow. You know,
right? No, I don't feel so bad.
Yeah.
So it's quite complicated.
Yeah, so tell us how you got started in this. Did you have your own health issues or was this just something you were always interested in?
Yeah, actually when I was 19, I had some health issues myself. I possibly have had hypothyroidism issues. I mean, low thyroid function my whole life. But when I was 19, I was... I caught some very serious infection, and after that, I just simply couldn't get my body to get out of that state. So I, even though the infection was over, and the doctors couldn't find anything wrong with me, I was still feeling very tired. I had headaches. I had a lot of low blood sugar issues. Basically, I was not really able to start or commence on my university studies. So that was a bad thing when you're 19.
Yeah.
And so what happened was I was lucky to get in contact with a Danish doctor that knew a little bit about hypothyroidism. So I was diagnosed with low thyroid function in Denmark. But then I found that the Danish doctors really didn't know a lot about how to handle the treatment on what to expect with medication and how what diet was appropriate when you had the symptoms that I had. And so I went on the internet, and this is back in 2000, I think, around 2000. So in the beginning of the time of the internet.
Yeah.
There was just really just porn on the internet at that time.
Right.
There wasn't much knowledge.
No, and I was using hours and hours and hours on the internet, and I stumbled upon another person that actually had Ray Peets. She had a little in her references. There was a reference to Ray Peet, and there actually was a phone number for him. So I actually called him up and got him on the phone.
Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
So that's, and then from there, I asked him a couple of questions, I remember. And from there, he gave me his email address and his, I think his homepage. And luckily, I wrote them down correctly. And so, and from there on, I actually started a correspondence with him. And he really helped me understand why I had ended up in the situation that my body was in, and how I should use the thyroid medication correctly that I was getting, and how, because it's a process to get well, it's not something you do in a week, and there's a lot of adjustments. So he helped me through that process. Extremely helpful.
Wow.
So that's actually what I'm trying to do now with my company. I try to help people use his ideas, and so I work with a lot of people that have thyroid issues, and either they are needing medication, they are already on medication, or they are simply can adjust their health with diet. That's also something that Ray Peet is very big on, always to try to use diet first, and then if that doesn't work, you can possibly add some medication in form of thyroid hormone, if it's necessary, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So what we'll do is we'll get into some of those topics in more
sure.
depth, and we'll talk more about nutrition and what changes might be appropriate for specific situations. But when we said we were going to talk to you about this topic, we got a lot of questions from our listeners. So maybe we'll just dive into some questions, and if one of those questions takes us off on a 30-minute tangent, then so be it.
And if any of our two listeners have any questions, you can just follow us on Facebook, and that's where we ask all of our questions every week, what we're going to be doing in the next show, and then you guys can ask us any questions you want or tell us what kind of show you want to listen to.
Yeah, so these first two questions are similar, so let's do both of the first ones at the same time and let Benedicta
All
get in there.
Right, Benedicta. Madeline from Toluca Lake, California. What's the best way to know if your thyroid is working well? Mary, are blood tests for thyroid accurate? If not, what tests are most useful and what do they tell you?
Ah. Blood tests are helpful, but you shouldn't rely on them completely. The blood tests for thyroid function that are most helpful are the total T4, total T3, and the TSH tests. And what that means is that the thyroid gland, which is a gland in the lying in the front of the throat, is actually excreting two hormones, T4 and T3. And those hormones are those that you measure in the blood. So you can measure those. Then there's another hormone called TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. And it's secreted by the pituitary gland. And it's a signal from the brain to the thyroid gland that tells the thyroid to work harder. So when you have a very high TSH, it indicates that you are hypothyroid. So doctors measure these values, and they say something about thyroid function. However, the problem often is that the range on the lab test for the normal range for these hormones are very broad, and that has historical reasons why they are made so broad. But the problem is a lot of people are lying in the lower end, for instance, for T4 and T3, and they are considered normal, but will still have symptoms.
Right.
So it's not that the test doesn't say anything. It's just that the range where doctors say that it's normal is so broad that you can easily be hypothyroid and come up with a so-called normal thyroid test.
So what you're saying is that the test ranges, a lot of the numbers may be very common, but they're common because so many people are malfunctioning.
Yeah, exactly.
So they look at the common numbers and say, oh, well, that's normal.
I've had lots of clients with lots of hyperthyroid type issues that they just come back with, oh, no, my lab tests say I'm fine. Like my doctor says I'm totally fine. And they're left in the dark, and as you alluded to, there's historical reasons why those ranges are inaccurate that aren't necessarily the greatest reasons, but they're there. And it's kind of equivalent to like the range of acceptable thyroid hormone is kind of like if you were to say the range of acceptable blood pressure was anywhere from like 120 to 800. Like, it's very different to have a blood pressure of 800 over 500 than it is.
Right, that's different.
But that's kind of how like thyroid markers are, like they're that exactly. Far out of range.
Exactly.
All right.
The other question about what is the best way to test for thyroid, right? That was the other question.
Yeah.
So because you can use blood tests as a supplement to using, according to Ray Pete, a good way to do it and an easy way to test for thyroid function is just pulse and temperature. So you measure your resting pulse rate and your oral temperature. And those should be within, a really good functioning thyroid. A person with a good functioning thyroid should have a pulse rate of 85 beats per minute, around there. 80 is also okay, but around 80 to 85 beats per minute as a resting pulse. and an oil temperature during the day of around 98.6 Fahrenheit.
And what means are you using to take the temperature? What's the optimal way to do that?
Just under the tongue with a digital thermometer. That's what I use.
Okay.
And I don't think that it needs to be a very expensive one. I think it's okay to just use a normal digital thermometer.
Is there much variance for, like, a lot of people will say that people who are athletic will naturally have a lower pulse. Does that affect the issue of, like, what someone's normal pulse would be if they were, say, like, a sprinter or an endurance athlete?
Yeah, I mean, if you're have a very high, you're very trained, a very trained person that does a lot of sports, I mean, he will, of course, have a lower pulse rate and still be healthy. The problem is when you just say by default that a low pulse rate must mean that you are healthy, because then you are you have been training a lot. The problem is that if you haven't been training a lot, you should have a low pulse rate.
Mm-hmm. Right, because a lot of people just, like, they watch baseball on TV, but that doesn't mean they're playing it and their pulse is still low, right?
And then you go to the doctor and he says, oh, you have a pulse rate of 65. It's great. Then it must be that you are in what's that called in English? You have a good
you're in good shape. Or...
yeah, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then they take that as a positive sign.
Yeah,
but actually, unless you're really in good shape, that's a negative sign.
Right. Kind of like low blood pressure.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a good thing, because it means that everything in your body is running at a slower rate, and so that's actually a sign that your metabolism is simply too low.
Hmm.
And when a person's looking at their pulse and their body temperature, is there a specific time of day, or does it in relation to when a person eats? Does that matter, or how do you do that?
Yeah, now it becomes a little complicated.
We're okay with complicated.
Okay, good. What Ray Pete recommends is that you take your these measurements, pulse and temperature, before and after breakfast. And the reason why you should do it this way is because some people with hypothyroidism wake up in the morning with very high pulse rate or very high temperature. And it's because they have very high stress hormones that actually compensates for the low thyroid function. And then when you eat your breakfast, your blood sugar increases, and that lowers the stress hormones. And then your numbers actually come down. And then that is actually the right numbers that indicate your thyroid function, those that you measure after breakfast.
So would it be good, like, if you're trying to just see if your thyroid's healthy, is it best to just do it after breakfast, or is it still useful to do it before and after to see how your body changes?
The reason why it's sometimes interesting to do the before and after breakfast is to see actually if you have a stress hormone a stress hormone issue, meaning do you really have a very high cortisol and adrenaline level?
Mm.
Is that a problem for you? Are you, for instance, some people would have 40 times the amount of adrenaline, and that will create some symptoms, if your pulse rate really falls drastically after you eat something, that's an indication that you are dealing with a very high adrenaline level. Mm. And that just tells me something about that where you are in your whole hormonal status. Of course, you can also just do it like that. You just take the measurements after breakfast and say, okay, these are the right measurements, and then that's it.
And when you're looking at that drop in numbers, how big of a drop would you need to see for a person to say, okay, I have some hormonal issues and some stress hormone issues going on?
I mean, if you, for instance, wake up with a pulse rate of, let's say, 100 something. And then you eat your breakfast and you take the measurement like 20 minutes after you have eaten your breakfast, and they're down to 70 or something like this, then it would be a strong indication that you are dealing with very high adrenaline. Of course, then there are less extreme cases, but just the fact that your pulse and temperature would fall after you eat to below the values that we talked about before, like very much low, below 80, and very 80 for the pulse rate, and very much below 98.6 for the temperature. Mm. I mean, already there you can say, okay, something is going on with the stress hormones also.
Okay, yeah, great.
I think a lot of people, not only because their doctors failed to diagnose them as hypothyroidism, but they also seem to confuse the fact that they maybe have a lot of energy or are even underweight or skinny with the idea that that they have hyperthyroidism, because they're told like, oh well, if you have hypothyroidism you're going to be fat, so if you're skinny, mm-hmm. like that's not possible. But like you're saying right now, they may have really high levels of adrenaline and cortisol and these stress hormones that are their body's way of compensating for this underactive thyroid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And also, just to finish the other question, how to know if you're hyperthyroid? I mean, a list of your symptoms is also very important to include in the whole picture. So both blood tests, pulse and temperature measurements, and then your symptoms, like cold hands and feet, like all the indications of a low cellular energy will show up.
And what are the most common symptoms that you see in correlation with that?
Actually, I have a list on my homepage, but it would be fatigue. It would be common infections. It would be allergies. It's different from person to person. We all have, our weak spots where it shows up. But it could be something like the things I said. It could be difficult sleeping, and it can be weight gain. It can be weight loss. I will talk about that in a moment, why it can be both. It can be that you have trouble sleeping at night. Thinning of the skin, thinning of the hair, digestive issues, blood sugar issues are very common with low thyroid function.
Okay, great. So before we move on from these testing, it sounds like you're saying that the blood tests can be helpful and can kind of give you some insights, but the best test is to do is the resting pulse and the body temperature. But when we look at the pulse range of 80 to 85 being good, what can someone take from their pulse rate being much higher than that? How do you view that?
Much higher. I mean, if you have a pulse rate of, let's say, I mean, it is possible to have a high thyroid function, of course, and have a pulse rate of 90 just from being very high metabolic rate. But usually a very high pulse rate would be high adrenaline.
And with that, you'd be able to see those other sort of stress symptoms, like your hands and feet might be cold, or you might have low.
Exactly. And then you would see if it's very high adrenaline, when you eat something, your pulse rate would drop. That would not be the case. It would be if it was the high pulse rate was due to high metabolism, then your pulse rate wouldn't drop just because you eat something.
Yeah, right, makes sense.
So what would make you hyperthyroid? We talked about hypo. What would make you hyperthyroid?
I mean, there are of course people that are secreting a lot of thyroid hormone and have a very high metabolism. Just like you can have an underactive thyroid, you can have an overactive thyroid. The problem in the diagnosis is that people that are hypo often are diagnosed as hyper. And that stems from the fact that the adrenaline issue is very confusing, because when you have a very high adrenaline and you're actually hyperactive, so you can't sleep, you can't sit down, you're jittery almost. That can be from stress hormones, but often that will to many doctors, they see it as, oh, you must be hyper. And then they actually give you something to destroy your thyroid gland or inhibit your metabolism somehow.
Right. Yeah.
So that's usually a bigger problem than people that are actually hyperthyroid. But of course, there are people that can be hyperthyroid. It's just not very common compared to the other case where you're hypo.
Right. Okay. Let's get through some more questions.
All right, Rania, my thyroid works better when I am pregnant. I lose all my excess fat, then slows down months after delivery. Is there a way to activate it naturally? How do hormones affect it?
Yeah, so she says that while she's pregnant, her thyroid is working better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's because during pregnancy, you have very, very, very high levels of progesterone. And progesterone is the body's natural anti-estrogen hormone, and estrogen inhibits the thyroid function. And then when she delivers, her hormones turns around and the progesterone drops sharply and the estrogen will come up again and inhibit her thyroid function. So it's simply she possibly have a estrogen progesterone imbalance.
So do you view a lot of these issues as estrogen problems? And if so, are there foods that you feel are causing a lot of those problems?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing for women not to do is use birth control pills that contains estrogen. But then there's a lot of foods that are actually estrogenic, and there's a lot of things that you can do with your diet that actually makes you unable to detoxify your own estrogen. So you actually, for instance, if you don't eat enough protein, your liver will not be very healthy or healthy enough, and it will have problem detoxifying your estrogen. So you, just by eating too little protein, you're already creating a problem there. So a lot of estrogen progesterone imbalances can be corrected with diet.
Do you see this in a lot with clients who are like on a vegan diet and not eating any protein?
Yeah, it can over time create a lot of problems.
And
also the beans and the soya products are very estrogenic in themselves. So that's another issue.
And
a lot of over-the-counter supplements are actually estrogenic somehow. And it's even promoted as being good.
Right.
But that's maybe one of the big reasons Repeat talks a lot about all this confusion, is that the whole estrogen industry has done a lot to sort of confuse our thinking about what estrogen is and how it works. And they're trying to sell the stuff, you know, and we're trying to repress it. So can you talk a little bit, like we've talked about like the thyroid, and people get these symptoms of fatigue and other problems, but when it comes down to it, these balance of like hormones and estrogen and their function, like, and the opposition between estrogen and thyroid hormone, would you say that a big piece of why this matters so much is because it affects how the cells are making energy?
Okay, I need that question again.
Yeah, would you say that like why this is so fundamental to like human health in general, whether or not people think they have a thyroid issue, is because the way that the cells make energy is very different if it's the stress hormones being activated or the thyroid hormone helping cellular respiration, and can you talk a little bit about how estrogen can get in the way of that?
Why the whole thyroid issue is so important is that thyroid is the main controller of cell energy. And if cells don't have enough energy, they cannot perform their life essential tasks. So when you have a low thyroid, that actually affects everything in your body. That's why so many symptoms comes when you have a low thyroid function. Estrogen does many things to interfere with thyroid function. It can directly inhibit the secretion of the thyroid hormone from the gland. And that you see that in women, they have a goiter, enlargement of the thyroid gland. That's because estrogen inhibits the hormone from being secreted from the gland. So the gland just grows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
With women that have a goiter like that, do you see that if you can reduce those estrogen levels and allow the thyroid to function properly, that those goiters will go down, or do you have to take additional steps?
I mean, of course, it would be good to, if you have a slight goiter, for instance, you could possibly correct it with diet that correct your hormonal imbalances as a whole, both increases thyroid function and lowers estrogen. Then that would help the goiter. Sometimes, if you have a very, very large goiter, it is necessary to use a thyroid supplement to actually shrink it. Because what you do when you take a thyroid pill is you take the job away from you actually give the thyroid gland a rest, and you provide the hormone through a pill instead. It is dangerous to take progesterone if you have a very large goiter. Not dangerous, but the problem is that the goiter is there because estrogen is blocking the release of the thyroid hormone from the gland. So if you take you take progesterone, that would actually inhibit the estrogen so much that the thyroid will release all of the stored hormone at once.
Oh, wow.
Come into a hyper thyroid state for a while. That can be difficult to control.
It's like a great time to run a marathon or an ultra marathon.
Yeah. So it's. So if you have large goiter, it's best to, it's not good to use a progesterone right away, at least.
Well, this goes right into Allie's question, so let's cover Allie's question now.
Allie, is it safe to take thyroid hormone? Doesn't that decrease your own body's production of it?
Yeah, for the time that you're using it, it does. I said before that it actually takes, it gives your thyroid a rest, so to speak, that it takes over the function of the gland. But when you stop taking it, your own gland will resume its production. So it's not like it can't resume after you have used it for a while. Sometimes people need to use a thyroid for a while if they've been very sick and they're stuck in a bad circle where they simply cannot get out of it. It can be useful to use a thyroid hormone for a while, and then if you feel like it and you are feeling that now I want to stop, you can slowly go down in medication and then stop completely, and your own thyroid will just slowly resume that the function again.
And just to play on that question a little bit, I know Raypeet's talked a lot about the changes in thyroid medications that are available, like the standardization of them and the different types and ratios of T3 to T4 that are present. If someone is like dealing with a medically diagnosed hypothyroid situation and they wanted to get good counsel and to possibly switch their medication to something that is known to be more effective and appropriate, would it be a good idea for them to do that through their doctor, or should they contact someone like you to try to get more clear counsel? What would you suggest for people seeking the right medication?
I don't prescribe anything. I recommend, I educate people on what to do and what not to do, from Ray Pete and my own perspective of what is best. The important thing when you are using any thyroid medication is to not use a pure T4 medication. That's the most important thing.
You said a pure T4?
Yeah, that's the most important, not to use that.
Okay. Cool. And is that because people have trouble converting T4 into T3?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, healthy males that are in young can usually use T4, and for them it's an okay medication. But many women have trouble using a pure T4 medication, such as Synthroid.
Oh my gosh, that's what they gave me for years.
Right.
Yeah, that's the most common thyroid medication. Also here in Denmark, that's also, if you go and you have a low thyroid on your blood test, that's what you will get, unless you're asking for something else. And that's like that in most of USA, I guess, and here in Europe also. However, there's a lot of doctors that are using other types of medication. It can either be natural desiccated thyroid hormone that is from pig or cow thyroid glands, and those kind of medications contain, they are also prescription drugs, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, and they contain T4 and T3, I mean both of the thyroid hormones, and the natural desiccated thyroids will be kind of okay. It will be usually be okay. However, Ray Pete is starting to recommend the use of synthetic T4 and T3 drugs instead. And that's simply because they are more reliable, because the whole process, the natural desiccated thyroid, the natural desiccated hormones were very, very good back in the 60s and 70s, but somehow the process of making them have somehow been lost. And they are not as reliable anymore in their strength and so forth. So he's not recommending them anymore in principle. That is not to say that that drugs such as Armour Thyroid is not okay. It's still okay. It's just that it was better before. Right.
Right. Yeah, a lot of things were better before. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But he's starting to recommend the synthetic form of T4 and T3, and then use it in a ratio that is usually 4-1, meaning 4 times as much T4 as T3, and that is very similar to the way our own gland secretes the hormones. So it's close, and sometimes you need to. It's very individual. Some people will eat a little more T3, so the ratio may be 3-1, and others do best on a 2-1 ratio. It depends.
Okay. Let's get on. So let's cover this next one, because maybe that'll tie in a little bit with Susie.
Yeah.
Susie from Grand Rapids, Michigan. What's the deal with iodine? How do you know if you're getting enough or too much?
I think it's very difficult to know if you're getting enough. The thing is, there has been this idea that if you have a thyroid problem, you should eat extra iodine because then you support your thyroid. The problem with that is that eating too much iodine can actually suppress your thyroid. So it's actually important not to get too much, because that will actually create a thyroid issue. I know a lot of people that actually have taken too much iodine, and then they end up being hypothyroid simply because of that. So the best way to get optimal iodine levels is actually to eat shellfish once a week. something like shrimps. Once a week, we provide you a lot of trace minerals from the sea, including iodine and other trace minerals that are important for thyroid function.
Nice.
Well, shrimp are delicious. Yeah. So that's
that works. Lobster,
does that work for everybody?
Crab.
Works
I'm for everybody. In for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Here I come.
And when the people take too much thyroid, there's a lot of people out there now that feel that a lot of the iodine issues are almost autoimmune-like responses for some people. Do you have an opinion on that at all?
That if you take iodine or what?
Iodine, yeah. For some people that are having like an autoimmune response to high levels of iodine.
I believe that what Ray Pete says that it can actually create a kind of inflammation process in the thyroid gland, and that's kind of an autoimmune response.
Yeah.
So it's kind of important not to do anything with iodine. I mean, don't use it. So I actually also use salt without iodine. Because iodine is added to salt, at least in my country,
oh, yeah.
If you don't look for one that hasn't gotten it. I don't know about
right,
USA.
We find that all of our processed iodized salt has iodine in it, but most of the sea salts do not. Most of the unprocessed.
Exactly. Yeah, sure.
Okay, Simon from Wrexham. I have heard that people who calorie restrict over long periods of time put on weight very easily when calories are brought back to normal, a sort of metabolic damage. Is this something to do with the thyroid, if it's true at all?
Yeah, if I understood the question correctly, then you say the people that actually go on a calorie-restricted diet...
They're hurting their thyroid.
And lose weight, then when they start eating the same amount as before, they will gain weight again.
Right.
That's simply because that's the way the body perceives a calorie-restricted diet. Because it perceives it as being an alarm situation where they say, hey, there's not coming as much food as I'm used to. I'm going to lower my metabolism now in order to preserve what, you know, I'm going to lower everything down to a lower level so because I don't know when food will come again.
Right.
And then that's, so when you start eating, you actually, by going on a very low calorie diet, you are lowering your metabolism and that will, then when you resume your normal diet, you will gain the weight back on. And that's simply, that's why Ray Pete recommends, if you want to lose weight, do it extremely slowly. That would be the only way to actually do it in a healthy way, and so that you also keep it off afterwards.
Mm. Okay, yeah. Great.
Cool.
All right, Mike. I read in Ray Pete's work that caffeine works similarly to thyroid hormone in supporting cellular energy production. Is that true, and how do each of those things actually boost cell energy function?
Oh, that's a difficult question. But caffeine, yeah, it is a good substance. And how it actually works biochemically is difficult for me to explain. I don't know if it works exactly the same way as thyroid hormone. I don't think so. But I think that it has some anti-inflammatory aspects to it. So it will be protective against a lot of diseases, but I don't think that it increases metabolism as such.
Mm. So maybe it's more similar to like how aspirin works then, rather than...
Yeah. Aspirin will actually increase the function of the thyroid hormone a little bit.
Mm.
But I don't know about caffeine, how it exactly works, but it is an anti-inflammatory substance, so it's generally a good thing.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, like if you, but it would also be the amount that you're drinking too. Like if you just sat there and drank pots of coffee all day, that would probably, I don't know anything. So don't listen to me. I'm just asking, basically.
Yeah, when you look at something that you feel is beneficial like that, when is there a point where something beneficial becomes a problem?
That's true. I mean, I have an online program where I go through a lot of Ray Pete's ideas. And for instance, on coffee, I talk a little bit about how some people get very get low blood sugar from drinking black coffee on an empty stomach, and really feel very bad with black coffee. And that's all often because it disturbs the blood sugar a little bit. So black coffee can have a stress-like, it can produce a stress-like reaction. However, if you drink it with sugar and milk, or you have the coffee with food, then you will have the benefits from the coffee, but you will not produce the stress reaction. So it's important to use the coffee in a way that your body feels that it's the right way. Don't sit and drink like liters and liters of black coffee each day on an empty stomach. That would not be good for you.
Talk to my husband. Okay.
And that's, I mean, that's...
In general, please, coffee is very good, and it is an anti-inflammatory substance and has been found to protect against Alzheimer's and things like this. So it's good to drink a lot of coffee. Just be aware that you should use it so that it fits your body.
Yeah, I think one of the strategies that like that's a really popular health trend these days that kind of goes against the soundness of what you're talking about is the whole bulletproof coffee thing is very popular. I don't know if it's big over in Scandinavia or not, but it's where you have coffee with like a scoop of butter or MCT oil, and that's your whole breakfast. And guys will do that, and like that's all they'll eat until like dinner, and then they'll have whatever for dinner on this bulletproof diet. And I did that for a while, and it was very effective at fat loss, but I found it had very catabolic effects on my body. And and there's a lot of guys that like rave about it, but I just think that they're feeling so good because they're in this extremely heightened adrenal stress state.
Yeah.
And I don't think they get what's actually giving them energy is stress.
You said that the people use it like putting a little bit of butter and MCT oil in the coffee, and that's the whole.
That's it.
That's the whole thing. On that's what they do until dinner.
For most, like sometimes they'll eat something else.
I didn't
else,
know that was the thing.
I mean, I'm the whole carb backloading guy. John Kiefer, like that was the strategy. Just have like a cup of coffee.
Coffee
with
holds him off
butter,
until dinner,
and then he'd binge on starches, which is.
Yeah,
really intense also. But you're in this adrenal stress state, so you feel really clear-headed and, you know, aggressive. But it's very very damaging,
moment.
You know?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
I would kill
it doesn't
somebody.
Sound like a whole meal. All-way peat stuff is a lot about, as I discussed in my program, a lot about combining foods so you are getting your body is getting right amount of protein, fats, and sugars, and why these are important. So if you drink only coffee with a little bit of butter and MCT oil for most of the day, I would think you are lacking some protein, some sugars maybe. It can be a fine thing to start your day on if you're not eating breakfast, but then you will need something very soon.
Yeah, we're just going to say don't do that. Let's go to the next one.
Well, this is actually mine, and you've answered it a little bit, but I say if you've been diagnosed hyperthyroid, which I was when I was about 16.
Hypothyroid.
Can you reverse it with diet and natural sups? And I haven't been on medication in, I don't know, 16, 17 years, and I just kind of like stopped thinking about it. But it could still be going on, but I have no idea how my thyroid's working these days.
Okay, is it you that asked
yes.
the question?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I mean, the first thing would be maybe to do what we talked about in the beginning of the program, how to test your thyroid function to see how low is it actually. And then if you're feeling fine, or maybe only have a bit of some minor problems, then and your numbers are not too low, and maybe get a blood test just to just to have a blood test, mm-hmm. and have that also into consideration, then I would start with the repeat diet, and I would do it very thoroughly for let's say half a year maybe.
Mm-hmm. Let's use this to kind of talk about what kind of food changes are often beneficial.
Yeah. I mean, the first and most important food change would be to use saturated fats instead of unsaturated fats. That's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And that's because unsaturated oils and fats inhibit the thyroid function in several ways. And so if you start substituting all your liquid oils, which are the unsaturated fats, for coconut oil and butter, then you're already really doing something good in respect to increasing your thyroid function. That's one of the most important things. However, it should also be noted that when you have been eating a lot of unsaturated fats for many years, those fats would be stored in your fat cells. And it can take up to 4 years to exchange the fat that you have in your stored fat cells from unsaturated to saturated
fats. It's a lot of exchanging.
Yeah, so if a person is losing weight gradually and those unsaturated fats are coming out of that fat storage, it's almost like they're consuming them as the body's working its way to get rid of that.
Exactly, because each time you get hungry and your blood sugar will drop a little bit, your adrenaline and cortisol will rise, and that will actually pull fat out from your fat cells to the blood. And if you've been eating a lot of unsaturated fats, those fats that come out will be unsaturated, and that will actually keep on inhibiting your thyroid for many, many years. And so it's very important that you actually eat the saturated fat to compensate for the unsaturated fats that will keep on being released from your fat tissues, because it's the ratio between the two types of fat that actually create the end effect.
Really, so good job, Crisco.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I've been working with Tony for a number of years and have been doing coconut oil and butter, so I think that's good. But I am inconsistent with my sugar intake.
Okay. What did you say? I didn't get that.
Oh, I said I'm doing great with the fats and stuff because I've been working with Tony for years, but my sugar intake is a little inconsistent. Like, I can go for months and doing great, and then I'll go on a bender.
So, yeah, maybe talk about starches a little bit. We haven't got into that at all, so that might help us explain something.
Sugar is very important for the metabolism, actually. So, because the liver uses the liver cells that converts the inactive T4 hormone to the active T3 needs glucose in order to function. So if your blood sugar drops, your metabolism also drops immediately. And that's another reason why not eating for long periods of time will actually decrease your metabolism. And you can actually add, I can't remember how many calories, but a certain amount of calories to your diet in the form of good sugars and not gain weight, because those good sugars will activate your thyroid hormone. So good sugars would be things like fruits. Mm-hmm.
Medium carb vegetables and stuff like that.
Yeah, and orange juice, watermelon, tropical fruits. And this is because fruits contains both fructose and glucose, whereas starches is only glucose. Am I saying that right? Glucose?
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
It's okay. We didn't get your name right, so you can get some of our words wrong too.
In Danish, that word is almost the same, but slightly different.
Well, you nailed it.
But the starches is only glucose. So, and what happens when we eat a lot of starches, for instance, in the form of bread, pasta, rice, is that there's a sharp increase in glucose in the blood. And that sharp increase in glucose will induce an insulin spike. And that insulin spike will actually do several things. It will, because insulin, it gets so high, the blood sugar, it has a tendency to lower the blood sugar below what it was before you ate your starch meal.
Right.
So you actually get a low blood sugar issue. So you get hungry again faster.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is that it will actually induce fat synthesis.
No, I don't like that sound.
Yeah. Right. So that's why there's nothing in principle wrong with starches as such. There are other issues with starches, but these are the most important. But there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that they will have a tendency to mess up your blood sugar more than fruits. And it will actually induce the production of fat from the sugar or from the starch you have eaten.
With other sugars, we get fruit can be a great resource, but what about I'm curious about the other liquid sugars like honey and coconut water, as well as something I used to do when I was really young. I used to just add direct fructose into like shakes and things like that. I'm not sure where you stand on that as a practice, though.
All of those things you mentioned, I think they're good. You said honey.
Yeah.
And white sugar.
Honey and coconut water and fructose.
And fructose, okay. But honey and white sugar, just to speak about those, have the same chemical formula. So it's actually the same. Honey is more or less the same as white sugar. It contains 50% glucose and 50% fructose. And that's the way sugar come in nature. That's simply the type of sugar that is in fruits, that is in, because white sugar is also from a fruit, right? It's from beets or it's from what, sugar cane. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is a natural sugar. Honey has the same composition. Honey is slightly better than white sugar because honey contains some minerals with it that makes it easier to handle the sugar for the body.
Right.
Then you said coconut water.
Mm-hmm.
I would believe it would be fine. It's a kind of a fruit sugar. I don't know exact composition of the sugar in coconut water, but I would believe it's fine. Then you have the pure fructose. And pure fructose is something that a lot of people are very afraid of. Somehow there's been some kind of almost a scare against fructose. But fructose actually, according to Ray Peet, has a very beneficial effect on the sugar metabolism. So normal people would just do fine on normal sugar because it's half fructose, half glucose. But the fructose actually catalyzes cells' uptake and use of the glucose. So it will actually accelerate metabolism and it will act a little bit like the active T3 hormone.
Wow. Huh. Is there, can you go too far with that? Like I did when I was 20, where I just had like scoops and scoops of fructose and didn't have enough glucose to get used.
Yeah, or even like the liquid sugars, don't they like spike it right faster?
Sure.
Like as opposed to
high fructose corn syrups and things like that. Is there a danger of getting too much fructose in ratio to glucose?
Possibly, yet. Not, I don't know if it's, I mean, if you only eat pure fructose, I don't know. But for instance, if you use it like instead, for instance, if you make a smoothie and you use that as your sugar,
mm-hmm.
That would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you also because have fruit in there.
Yeah, because there's a fruit in there too. There are some people that have serious sugar metabolism issues like hypoglycemia, that they cannot eat sugar at all. And actually, there's been, Ray talks about that people can actually turn the sugar metabolism completely around so they can tolerate all kinds of sugars if they use fructose for a while. Yeah. I mean, in pretty high concentrations. But I would think that if you start gaining a lot of weight, for instance, then you're getting too much.
Yeah, I heard of, like, I think in one of his articles, he even talks about one doctor who was curing people of type 2 diabetes by putting them on, like, an almost all fructose diet.
Yeah, and that's because it actually, what's wrong in diabetes is that the cells do not respond. In type 2 diabetes, the cell do not respond to insulin. And so the fructose will help the cell take up the glucose and use it.
Very cool.
All right. Okay, I think we have time for one more question. So let's get this one. This is a good wrap-up question, too.
Yeah.
All right. Wendy, what are the most important things to do and to not do in support your thyroid?
To support
your thyroid.
Diet-wise?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we talked about the unsaturated and the saturated fat. So first of all, cut out all unsaturated oils. And that will also include things like nuts, grains, and seeds, because a lot of unsaturated fats are in these products. Then actually in my program, in my module 2, I'm just looking because I have a list in my online program of things that suppresses the thyroid function. And that is, for instance, there's also something like carrot juice or carrots that have been boiled. It's because the carotene in carrot juice or boiled carrots will suppress your thyroid function.
Interesting.
Yeah,
there's
and not raw carrots, because raw carrots, the carotene cannot be released from the fiber. But as soon as you cook the carrots or you juice the carrots, you can simply suppress your thyroid doing that. Another very important thing not to do is to eat raw cabbage or raw vegetables from the cabbage family, because they contain enzymes that interfere with the formation of the thyroid hormone.
Is that true if it's like fermented? Is that still counted as raw, like in the case of sauerkraut?
Sauerkraut has, I say it in German almost, but I think maybe that the enzymes that are present in the cabbage will be diminished at least. However, the lactic acid that are present in that sauerkraut thing actually is an inflammatory substance. So that can also be a problem for the body. Mm. So that's not a favorite food of mine.
I see. Any other ones you want to mention, or any other key supplements?
Any supplements that estrogen, as we talked about, is a problem for the thyroid. Mm-hmm. So any kind of birth control pills containing estrogen, any product that has estrogenic effect can be something like soya products, lentil, beans, and so forth have some estrogenic substances that is not good for the thyroid. Grapefruit juice or grapefruits as such actually inhibits a liver enzyme that makes you unable to detoxify your estrogen.
Wow.
So there's a lot of things that should be taken out of the diet. And then and then you should make sure that you, for instance, get enough protein, that you get enough of your trace minerals from your seafood, and that you use enough of the good fruits that support your thyroid function.
Great.
That's awesome.
Those are good tips.
And as you were speaking, I was just remembering the different modules that I went through when I went through your Biochem Nordic program, and just want to recommend that to people who are really hungry for this information and want it presented in a really organized fashion. The website for that again is biochemnordic.com. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. So it's BIOCHEM and then NORDIC.
DIC.com.
And we'll put that on the show notes too.
Yeah, I highly recommend it for people that are interested in it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us today and sharing so much great information. Yeah. It was really great talking to you on the other side of the planet.
Yeah. And the next time I'm over there, I'm going to expect a place to stay.
don't worry about it.
Yeah, couch crashing.
All right. Thank you so much, Benedicte, for hanging out with us.
Yeah, sure. It was nice. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks. I'll email you soon. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
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 Well, that was great. I really liked her.
Good times.
She was good.
She's awesome.
She was good. I'm going to go visit her. Yeah. Whether she wants me to or not.
Right. She's like, so I'm here.
So now we have Danish sponsors.
Yeah.
It's Audible.
Right.
.com. So remember when we didn't even have a sponsor? That was silly. So now Audible.com has given all of our listeners a free audiobook for their choice just because we say Audible.com.
Audible.com.
To find the link, go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook. And if you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
Audible.com. Oh, that's a different one.
Now it's going to throw them off. Yeah. And if you want to learn more about how to, this is kind of the same thing. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. You can go to Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net. He's got some great info there. And Benedicta's was
biochemnordic.com.
Yeah.
Biochemnordic.com. So check it out.
Bye bye.
Until next time. Bye.
Where the sun is on.